So I've been going to physical therapy recently.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if their meme game is incredible or really lazy, but I'm really enjoying the content that I'm seeing. Like, it's so bad, it might actually spiral around into, like, being ironically good territory. Let me explain. They have a large screen inside the main office area where they project not only, like, you know, hey, here's some fun facts about our staff, here's, you know, an upcoming event, but also just, like, this assortment of physical therapy-related memes to all of their clients. So a couple that I remember, you know the meme of, like, Dwight Schrute staring intently at the camera?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the top line of that would read something like, laughter is the best medicine. False. Physical therapy is the best medicine. It's like, okay, certainly. There's that meme from, like, 2010 of, I think it's Aerithorn from The Lord of the Rings. You know, the whole one does not simply meme that, like, died out a decade ago. And their version of that is, one does not simply miss their physical therapy appointments if they want a pain-free life.
I think this is, like, so bad that they're ironically good. Like, I think that's what it is.
Yeah. They have the I don't always guy, you know, the guy with the Dos Equis spear. And he's like, I don't always go to physical therapy. But when I do, I expect to be healed in the first session. And I'm not sure if, like, they think these are funny, if they think this is what their patients find funny, or they're just trolling everyone, but I appreciate their commitment to the craft, and now I wish that every single medical professional I went to had their own specialized version of this. One does not simply start flossing the week before their dental appointment.
You could start an entire business creating memes and curating memes for different businesses. Have you thought about that?
False. I've already started a business curating memes.
Welcome back, listeners, to our awful meme recreation in
where I describe in painstaking detail memes
and different platforms. So today you are listening to Wow Known Date These Guys. I'm Naomi Guy. That's
Joel Guy.
Thank you. And we are discussing the mysterious episode today that Joel has yet to tell me what I'm doing. But first of all, I'd like to note our drink of the week, which is my new favorite Trader Joe's drink because I drink it basically every night because I love a good sleepy girl mocktail. It is the Power of Seven Purple. I brought the whole bottle and everything. Yeah, seven. It's organic juice blend. It's a blend of organic pomegranate, tart cherry, black mulberry, red grape, purple carrot, cranberry, and blueberry juices. And it's very, very purple. And let me say that this with a little bit of sparkling water, wonderful. A wonderful
mocktail. Let me say, every so often I read the ingredients list of one of those, like, juice blends, and I think to myself, they only put that ingredient in there because it's cheap, right? They needed a filler. They weren't, you know, adding mulberries for their antioxidants or anything like that, huh?
Who knows? I don't know. It's not me. I don't know. Joel, let's get this party on the road. Oh, it's
Naomi,
it's
how is the drink?
It is splendid. I already said this, Joel. You missed my whole intro. I drink it every night. That's how good it is. A little bit of sparkling water. It is
fair enough. What does it taste like?
It tastes like juice, Joel. That's why it's called juice.
Real helpful.
It tastes like grape with a little bit of pomegranate. I can't really taste the cherry, if I'm being honest, because tart cherry juice is very tart. But I really enjoy it. I really like it because of the tart cherry juice, because, you know, that little kick of melatonin just really
shoots me
into my sleepy bear self. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So our listeners know what this episode is because they read the description, but Naomi does not. I told her it was a secret. And I mean that because if she knew what it was, she would not have agreed to record. And unfortunately, there's still a chance she might hang up. That's right. It's why women deserve. No. It is not why women deserve less. We've done enough of that.
I literally want to shut my fucking laptop. No.
Naomi, I have a little intro planned. In 2009, Broderick Stephen Harvey Sr., better known as Steve Harvey, released the book Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man. This was a dating guide that was allegedly made to reveal the secrets.
David Guy, I hate you!
Of the male mind, so women could weaponize men's psychology against them and get what they wanted out of dating. The book went on to sell 10 gazillion copies, spent 64 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, and right now today has a 4.5 star rating on Amazon with 8,500 reviews. It is number 42 in mate seeking, which is, I guess, a category on Amazon, number 906 in interpersonal relationships on Amazon, and number 1,060 in love and romance. Now I stumbled across.
I have never been tricked this bad in my entire life, and I want to know what karmic energy that I did to get. Oh my god, I dislike you right now.
So I stumbled across this book early last year, and we milked several episodes out of just reading the horrible advice he thought fit to give his listeners. There's some nuance, but it basically boiled down to men are simple, women are complex. When relationships don't work out, it's the fault of the woman. Everything men do is logical. Everything women do is emotional. Gender roles are good. Successful women shouldn't be confident. Men don't need to change any element of their behavior and actually can't be made to change, according to Steve, but women sure do. We also discussed in separate episodes both of the movies that were made based off of the book, Think Like a Man 1 and 2, and we'll probably discuss the third, without Naomi's permission, which has been in production hell for forever, whenever that actually comes out. But Naomi, we're not here today to talk more about that book. No, our listeners can go check out the 5+ hours worth of content we put out across 2022. No! We are here to discuss the pseudo-sequel he released in 2013, a book I only learned existed when I was searching Amazon to compare relationship books to the success of Why Women Deserve Less. This is a sequel written by Steve that was seemingly designed to both capitalize on the success of his first book, you know, make more money, while also cleaning up his reputation by clarifying parts of Act Like a Lady that some people consider maybe a little sexist. And while the book does a pretty good job in the first category, I think it also sold, like, 2 million copies. It's sitting at a 4.6 star rating on Amazon with 3,300 ratings. It doesn't do a good job with the latter category. It wildly contradicts some of the advice from the first book, it completely ignores problematic sections of the first book, and actually makes his life philosophy look even worse in some parts. That book, Naomi, is called Straight Talk, No Chaser. Now, I gotta ask, I'm gonna post this, the link to it, into our episode chat, if you want to take a look at that. That is the link to the Amazon page. When you hear the phrase straight talk, no chaser, what is your first reaction? What does that make you think?
Straight talk makes me think that you're talking to one of the gals. No chaser makes me think that it is, oh, actually, Honey just picked up on this book and it wants to save me $2.83 at other stores. So take that, Amazon. It makes me think that it's a man trying to give women advice. That's what I think of when somebody says straight talk, no chaser.
I've heard the phrase like straight shooter with no chaser. There's the idea that, you know, you might take a straight quote unquote shot of a liquor and then have something to chase it. You know how like some people will drink whiskey and then immediately a shot of water, or some people will... Well, you know, like tequila, you know, you drink the tequila and then you suck on the lime and lick the salt and all that. So it's like, I'm not going to give you the benefit of a nice thing to temper the blow. I'm just going to give it to you straight up, real deal. You know, I'm going to speak to you as equals, as you're saying. It's a weird title for a book. I would like probably build on the Act Like a Lady brand and call it, you know, Act Like a Lady, blankety blank, 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 or Act Like a Lady 2. But he goes with this, which I think is his attempt to be like, no more bullshit. This is Steve Harvey not lying to you. I'm telling you the real deal, the raw dog deal. And doesn't matter what happens. Naomi, have you pulled up that link?
Yes, I have.
What do you think about that cover of the book?
It's kind of weird that he's looking at me like that. He has a really creepy face and his dimples are really intruding and his bald head is very shiny. But other than that, I don't like the cover because it just looks like all of those early 2000s self-help books or like late 90s that like all the women that were single used to read because they were like, this is the only way that I will help to attract men is if I know their inner workings and all of their secrets. And Steve Harvey's apparently the man to tell all the secrets.
I personally have a problem with smiling with my teeth. I think I kind of look like the devil, and I always feel super uncomfortable when, like, I've exposed my teeth in a photo. Do you see what I mean? I'm not even trying. I am deliberately trying to make it look good, and it still looks creepy.
No, just smile. Just smile. Just smile. Stop. Stop. Okay, that looks fine. Now do it with teeth.
No. Yeah, there's something about, okay, but the point I'm getting at is, like, I'm not going to fault Steve Harvey, but I do think this is, like, a very creepy smile. I would think that someone who's been on stage for this long would know if his smile is creepy and would, like, close his mouth. This, I don't know, the pose he's adopted is kind of like a guidance counselor, you know, in, like, a film where he turns the chair around and he's like, listen up, I'm going to tell you how it is. So it's a little bit patronizing. But yeah, the cover is kind of weird too, because he's taken the exact same font from Act Like a Lady and repeated it, right? So he has the blue for the first part, and then he has the pink for the second part. Or did I get that backwards? Yeah, blue for the first part. He's got nice solid letters for Straight Talk. No chaser, he's had a little bit of like an italic flourish, sort of like how he did with Act Like a Lady, and it's in pink, so you know it's like men and women, he's contrasting those. So like the last book, he's still ripping off Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, which is the first book we've read where this exact type of lettering was used on the cover. Not only are the shades nearly identical to the Men Are From Mars original cover, but he's like stealing the exact same font. So, like, he's taking inspiration from the successful books, and you kind of have to see the book through that lens, where, like, this is not Steve Harvey, like, telling you the truth because he wants to tell the truth. This is a product of marketing. You know, they did some focus groups, they figured out what's popular, they are trying to ape, you know, the success of Men Are From Mars and get as many copies sold as that. And so the book is a byproduct of, you know, what he thinks people want to hear. I don't know. That might influence some of the things he says in this text. Food for thought. So Naomi, we are going to jump into the intro. Are you ready?
Yeah.
We're doing something different this time. I'm having Naomi read segments of this book rather than me read them to Naomi. So she gets to react in the moment. Why did you
say my name like that? You were like, Naomi.
Okay. Can you start with that opener from the intro, Naomi?
When I set out to write my first book, I did it only intending to share with women who send in questions to the Strawberry Letter segment of my radio program, show up to my comedy shows, nodding in agreement with my observations on love and relationships, a no-holds-barred guide to understanding what men think about love, sex, dating, and marriage. Wow, that was a very long
That's time. Our pitch. Isn't that our pitch? He stole from us in 2013.
Love, sex, dating. We don't talk about marriage, Joel. That's true. We can add that to our segment after you get married. My sole hope was that it would help women get beyond the myths, stereotypes, and general chatter that puts a stranglehold on the way they conducted themselves in relationships with us. My intention was to inform them about who we really are and what it takes to win in love with us when playing the dating game. My intentions were pure. I care deeply about these things because I'm a husband, a son, a radio personality who speaks to millions of women daily via my radio show.
I don't mean
and
to
most
brag.
Importantly of all, most importantly, important of all, of the father of four girls. Beautiful young women who deserve good men who will love them, respect them, and treat them the way they want to be loved, respected, and treated. What I found, though, was that Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man simply wasn't enough. As I hosted relationship seminars across the country, I discovered that no matter how thoroughly I thought I'd explained what motivates men, women still had innumerable questions about why we men act and react the way we do in various romantic situations. If I had told a group of women that men are driven solely by what they do for a living, how much they make, and who they are, and women wanted to know why stability is more important to men than falling in love. Wait. Oh, I read that wrong. If I said men show their love for providing, professing to, and protecting their significant other, my audience wanted to know why men can't love the women the way women... why men can't love the way women love by leading with their hearts. For every question I answered in the chapter, quick answer to the questions you've already wanted to ask, from what do men find sexy, and do you mind if women don't work, do you mind if your woman doesn't work, to are men okay with their women having male friends, and is getting all your mom's his mom's side important, there were 50 more topics I hadn't addressed. There was also quite a bit of dissension. Some questioned why I counseled women to hold off sleeping with a man for at least 90 days while she investigated his intentions. Some argued that if they dared institute standards and requirements and tell men up front that they were looking for serious relationships, they would run off guys who might be interested in them. Other questioned why a twice divorced comedian am qualified to give advice to women who on how to have a long-term successful relationship. All these questions, observations, and reservations and demands for clarification and more answers reminded me that women are absolutely the most inquisitive creatures God has created. Woo!
Woo. What do we think? This is his explanation for why he wrote this book.
I think it's complete and utter bullshit because he acts as if women don't know anything and that they're just running around like chickens with their heads cut off and act like he knows every single thing. And he's, yes, twice divorced. He is twice divorced, but suddenly he knows everything because he has four girls who he probably doesn't raise because he's too far off in these freaking across the country giving these freaking seminars to women.
Oh, you're picking up on some stuff I thought we would have to wait till chapter one or two to discuss. Oh, man, you're ahead of the curve. Yeah, so he literally opens the intro by describing, I don't know if this is true or not, a scenario where he was... No, he's like, I was in a parking garage and like getting into my car and this lady was chasing after me. She was like running in her heels up the ramp and she's like, Steve Harvey! And he's like, oh man, I gotta get out of here. And he's about to get in the car as this woman is chasing him down and she holds up her hand and she's like, I got it! I got the ring, Steve Harvey! And it was all due to you. So his intro to the book is describing how amazing he is because he wrote Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man, and women are chasing him down to tell him how smart his advice is, how incredibly successful his advice is when implemented properly. And then he has this intro where he's like, I thought I made it clear, but women are too inquisitive, i.e. dumb, to understand what I'm saying, so I guess I gotta write another book, because you're, like, jumping to conclusions, things I haven't said, even though a lot of stuff was pretty evident that I was being a dick, I'm like, I gotta come back and explain things to these ladies. I think he's being a dick here. I think his first book was popular and he wanted to make more money, maybe his publisher pushed him into it. He was forced to write this other book, you know, sell 2 million copies of it at $15 a pop. He also is a little bit defensive here. He brings it up, which I think is probably an attempt to deflect criticism from the fact. I don't think he talked at all about his previous marriages in the last book. But then he's like, oh, well, that doesn't matter. Like, clearly I'm smart. Look, the lady chased after me on the ramp. I know what I'm talking about. So, like, I think in this book he shows an attempt at more humility. He attempts to humanize himself and make him seem like more of an expert in this material, having like suffered through loss and love and all sorts of problems. But he also isn't actually addressing the criticism. And the criticism is maybe go after people in successful marriages to explain how to have successful marriages, not someone who's clearly quote unquote failed at marriage two times. But I also like the fact you picked up on the thing where women don't know shit about dating, according to him. He's like, yeah, they're always coming to me for advice, and ladies would be running around like headless chickens. And, you know, no one likes headless chickens besides circus freak shows. So what are women? Circus freaks, am I right? I got another section for you.
Okay.
This one's shorter, I promise.
My hope is that when you finish reading this book and really think about the information I'm sharing with you, you'll have an even more informed understanding of men and certainly an appreciation for how incredibly simple we are. We come at every situation from the same angle, using the same principles, seldom deviating. There really is no use applying your thought process to the relationship equation or expecting your man to adopt your logic when it comes to dating and mating. You can't, after all, change men. I've had countless women ask me, Steve, when are you going to write a book telling men what they should be doing? Well, there is no lecture I can give, no panel I can sit on, no television roundtable I can host that will ever make a man pick up a relationship book and dig deep into it. He simply is not going to read it. I can bet you my bottom dollar that even if I were to give this book away, I could count on one hand the number of men likely to pick out a book about how to how to better get along with women. First off, a man would never allow another man to tell him what he should be doing in his own house with his own woman. Second, I can guarantee you, he definitely doesn't want to hear Steve Harvey telling him what to do. Not after I gave away the playbook in Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man, and especially after I divulge all of the men's relationship secrets here.
What are you thinking?
I think this is fucking dumb because the amount of, like, it just shows that women do all of the, like, the silent labor in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's just talking about, like, oh, well, men will never do this because men, like, they don't want to listen to what I have to say. No shit, you are not a relationship expert. You literally are twice divorced. If you had a relationship for a very long time, maybe at that point, I, myself, Naomi Guy, would listen to you, Steve Broderick Harvey. But until that point, when you are in a successful relationship and you haven't been twice divorced with four girls that you probably aren't raising, I won't fucking listen to you. I think it's dumb that you think that men won't listen to you because they will if you, you know, had something good to say.
Yeah. I appreciate how he's both selling his last book. He's like, oh, I gave it all away. The guys are so mad at me because I told you all the genuine secrets in a bargain basement book you can buy for $15 at your local Barnes & Noble. But he's also like, oh, they're going to be even more mad at me when I give it all away a second time. And it's like, what did you leave on the cutting room floor? What important secrets do you feel worth divulging here? But yeah, I think you're hitting the nail right on the head. Once again, he's reiterating the idea that women are responsible for fixing relationships. Men cannot be expected to go out and fix relationships by themselves. Women needs to be the ones learning all the secrets of relationships, learning how to talk to men, at least according to him with his advice, and doing the stuff necessary to make a man feel better so the relationship works out better. Once again, he's like, if a relationship fails, it's a woman's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which yeah. It is. I mean, like, we all agree with that. We all know that it's always women's fault when relationships ends. It's just like, you know, he used the wrong method to come to that point. You know, that's my real nitpick. The other thing is, and I think this is an important thing for all self-help, I won't limit it to him, his advice here is kind of non-falsifiable. Do you know what I mean by that?
No.
Okay. If you want to test something scientifically, if you want to prove something is true, you have to develop experiments where you can prove it false.
Okay.
The reason for that is, if you want to prove something is true, you need to have a way to establish whether or not that thing is indeed the truth. You can't develop an experiment where every single experiment confirms it to be true. You have to give the option that your theory is false in order to find the actual truth. So one example might be testing the existence of gravity. You have to develop experiments where there's the possibility gravity doesn't work in the ways you expect. So you're like, hey, I'm going to hold up a pen and I'm going to drop it. And there's a chance, for whatever reason, gravity doesn't work in the way that we think. It falls at a slower rate, it falls at a faster rate, it remains hovering in midair. I anticipate, I'm pretty sure, that when I do this test, the pen will fall down. But I can see that there is a chance that this could not be the way the world actually works. And that's like a super basic example, but like when you get into stuff about like using magnets or like quantum physics to alter, you know, how gravity impacts things, you need to develop experiments with the same idea in mind. You can be like, I predict this behavior is going to be the way it works. And if you don't, you're not going to have actually proven anything. The problem is, you know, when you expect something to be true, you have the confirmation bias. And this has happened over and over again in science. There have been a number of examples where people are like, I see this phenomenon, and they develop a bunch of experiments that prove this phenomenon exists. But then when like an independent researcher does the same experiments and they're not anticipating the phenomenon exists, the phenomenon disappears entirely. You know, there are people who like falsify their data or like use their experimental data in a way to make it look more compelling than it is, because they want it to be true. They want the research to be worth something. But again, you have to develop scientific experiments with the possibility that maybe your research isn't right in order to not jump to conclusions, in order to not, you know, draw bad inferences. So what I mean by this being non-falsifiable is there's literally no way he can be proven wrong in the framing that he's created. If his advice fails, it's because women didn't try hard enough. If his advice fails, it's not because the advice was bad. It was because the woman didn't put in enough work. And so this is really clever framing on his part. And a lot of self-help books have the same framing. They're like, look, if you don't follow my advice to the letter, if you don't do these incredibly complicated things, it's, you know, your problem. But it also is a dishonest way of approaching relationship advice, right? If this was an honest way, he would say, look, this works for me, might not work for you, but I found success with it. Give it a try. And, you know, if you can think of a better way, let me know and I'll write another book or something. Another good example might be like Hollywood athletes or Hollywood movie stars and their diets. Often you'll read pieces where they're like, how did you bulk up for this role? And it's someone who, you know, gained like 60 pounds of muscle in 3 months, which is physically impossible without steroids. But no one wants to admit they did steroids. So they're always like, oh, I ate 20,000 calories a day and worked out 8 hours a day in the gym. And they have these like ridiculous workouts that they describe. And almost always they're lying, right? But the reason they lie is so if someone tries that diet and fails, they can be like, oh, well, you didn't do the 8 hours a day. If you'd done 8 hours a day for 3 months, you would be, you know, super jacked. If you'd eaten 20,000 calories, you'd be super jacked. When in reality, it's just, no, I'm sticking stuff in my butt and, you know, it makes me swole. There's not much more complicated than that. So yeah, right away, Steve is saying he's a god among men in terms of authority on women. He's saying women are responsible for relationships. He's not giving any chance that his advice could be wrong, and he's attempting to deflect all criticism that he's just doing it for money. This is all in the intro. Great work, Steve. Let's get to chapter one. So chapter one, Naomi, is called The Making of a Man. What do you think he talks about here?
Men's childhood and why they're so sucky.
Damn, you're good at this.
Thank you. It's almost like I've read the book. What if I went behind your back and just read the book?
That would be very funny. And you're just like, I know that, Joel. I'm an expert in Steve Harvey, too. I got my PhD in Broderickology.
Broderickology. Oh, God. I didn't have any business being married at 24. Yes, I believed wholeheartedly in the idea of marriage. After all, my parents had been married for 64 years before my mother passed away, and I had every intention of duplicating what they had, a stable relationship and a home filled with love, strength, perseverance, and wisdom. It was all I knew to do. So it made all the sense in the world to give a ring to the woman I loved and say I do. And that was where the problem began. In the weeks leading up to the marriage, I didn't have a steady paycheck to support my soon-to-be wife. The small things, do you want me to read those?
No, don't worry about that.
Okay. My mother, being a woman who wanted to see her child married and knew how devastating it would have been to my fiancé to call off her dream wedding, talked me out of canceling the big day. Years later, my mother apologized and admitted she would have never talked me into getting married if she knew how unprepared I was to be a good husband. By then, we were able to put our finger on what was missing, what was dooming my first marriage even before I spit on the stamps we put on those invitations was dry. I didn't know who I was, what I would do with my life, and how much I was going to make doing it. As I explained in Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man, everything a man does is filtered through his title, who he is, how he gets that title, what he does, and the reward he gets for the effort, how much he makes. These are the three things every man has to achieve before he feels like he's truly fulfilling his destiny as a man. And if any one of those things is missing, he will be much too busy trying to find it to focus on you. He won't have it in him to settle down, have children, or build a life with anyone. In my first marriage, I didn't have these things lined up by any stretch. I had dropped out of college and went to work at Ford Motor Company before I was laid off and didn't get a job until a month after we married. It was a way to make some cash, but I knew it wasn't what I wanted out of life, that it wasn't my calling. I was frustrated. Our financial outlook was in shambles, and we were always at it, always fighting about something, because I wasn't a man.
How we feeling?
I think he's insecure as fuck. And I think that the only way that he thinks that he has worth is if he's making money and he's supporting his family, which I'm assuming was passed down from his parents. And that is the reason why his first marriage suffered, because he didn't know who he was because he was insecure.
Yeah, I mean, I won't pathologize this. I do think people who are raised in poorer backgrounds probably focus more on money, because they see it as like a way to achieve everything that like they didn't have when they were growing up. I don't think this is unique to him, but I certainly think like it had an impact on how he perceives the world. I think similarly to, maybe not to the same extent, but like similarly to how Aaron Clary describes, you know, the importance of being a productive member of society and why women deserve less, he's doing the same thing, where he's placing all of the value of men in like their productive capabilities, where, you know, men aren't worthy either to themselves or to society without having, you know, a good job, a good role, and being a provider. Would you agree?
No, I definitely agree. I think that's, yeah.
Now, I have a theory here. I think, you know, in terms of what I said in the intro applies here, that the publisher probably said, Steve, a lot of people noticed you didn't mention your divorces in the last book, and you seem kind of like a know-it-all. You should probably address those and appear more humble and personable in this one. I don't know if this is him, like, trying to, like, be authentic or being authentic. It feels a little more real, I think, than the tone he had in the last book. Honestly, it doesn't matter, because I'm digging deep into Steve Harvey lore here, but the story completely breaks his advice from the last book that we discussed in, you know, the different parts of the book episodes. And it's worth discussing, like, how that impacts his advice from Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man. So the first thing is, and he repeats it here in a different form, he said in the last book that men would never commit themselves to a woman if they weren't fully actualized. He described men as aspiring to be, you know, the top of whatever area they were in, whether it be CEO, king of the corner stoop, et cetera, et cetera. Here, in the opening anecdote of this book about his very life, he admits he settled down due to social expectations and his personal convictions about marriage. So what he's admitting here is that men can actually commit to women prior to being actualized. His own life experiences are contradicting his advice. He's like, women, you have to understand, men are not going to commit to you until they feel actualized. Also, women, I didn't feel actualized and I committed to a woman. Do you see what I'm saying?
But he, to his defense, he didn't fully commit, because he committed, but then he was like, oh shit, I'm going to get a divorce now. So maybe, okay, interpretation time. Maybe I think he meant he just can't fully commit in the sense of, I'm not going to spend the rest of my life with someone. That's all I'm saying.
I think that's totally fair. I think that's a perfectly reasonable response. But this is a similar problem to why women deserve less. How can women tell the difference between someone who's fully committed and someone who's not fully committed? Because those two people might do the exact same things, such as getting married, professing their love. He actually admits in this section further down, he's like, I had professed to her my love. I had provided to her as much as I could. I had desired to protect her and my children. And it's like, he did all of the things that an actualized person would do without being actualized. And so what this is telling me is, women have no way of telling whether or not a man is actually going to be committed to them. Even if he's achieved what he thinks and what they think is the top of his profession, he might still, you know, go off in a completely different direction. This is bad advice.
Yeah.
Here's the second problem. Last book, he used the Ford Motor Company as an example of why the 90-day rule works. Remember, he said in the last book, when he started Ford, he didn't get any of the benefits like medical coverage until after 90 days of employment. And I pulled the actual passage here. He says, it was a really simple equation. Work hard, prove yourself, get the benefits. It's the same way with jobs in the government, places like the post office, the DMV, and even in some corporations. You have to prove yourself to get the good stuff, the extras, the benefits. So he's saying, in that passage, the reason the 90-day rule works, and that's the rule where you don't have sex with anyone for 90 days after you meet them, to prove that they're committed to you. The reason it works is because it proves that people are committed to you. Here, Steve Harvey admits he had been working with the Ford Motor Company, but didn't give a shit about the job. It was just a paycheck. He spent 90 days, he got his insurance benefits allegedly, because he'd been doing it for a couple of years, but he didn't care about them. Even worse, Ford Company didn't care about him, because it later lays him off. So the 90-day rule can't work, again per his own life story, because it doesn't prove that the person who spent 90 days fighting and struggling in order to get those benefits cares, and it doesn't prove that the person who implemented that rule cares. This is fucked up. But this is mind-blowing to me, because it's like someone completely different wrote this book. It's like they don't even know what was in the first part, and they're either using real anecdotes from Steve Harvey's life to illustrate life lessons he wants to teach, ignoring what he said last time, or trying to build off those themes, but not having anything that supports those themes.
Joel, what did we learn from Why Women Deserve Less? That your editor cannot also be your ghostwriter, because when they ghostwrite, they don't always edit their own work because they think it's perfect the first time out.
That's a really good point. Yeah. So the reason I bring this up is I'm underscoring the fact that based upon Steve Harvey's own life story, neither the men having to reach the top of the corner stoop becoming actualized advice nor the 90-day rule advice actually works. His own life story disproves all of that. We already discussed in the last part that it was like stupid advice to begin with, but here in his book that is meant to build upon the themes of the last one, he's just completely fucking them up. Great job, Steve. Great job. Next part is a little bit later in the chapter. Are you ready for some misogyny?
Woo!
I know we have the option to add sound on here. I need to add like the air horn button.
I wish my father would have warned me, would have sat me down and schooled me on the particulars of marriage. Perhaps he could have told me that a time comes when one needs to cut off all the foolishness, the screwing up in school, fooling around with a bunch of different women. I wish he would have told me that if I didn't stop acting foolish by a certain age, there would be a cost associated with my lack of focus, with deferring my dreams of being an entertainer. Had he done so, a lot of pain would have been spared for everyone all around. He didn't share with me his thoughts on when a boy needed to focus on maturing into a man. He didn't tell me, Steve, listen, you got a couple years to date a few women while you figure this thing out, and once you decide who you are and what you want to do and how you want to make money, go get a partner who can help you accomplish these things. This is not something a woman can teach. A man who is 22 or 23 years old cannot have his mother sitting him down and talking to him about what it takes to be a man. She has no idea of the competition level on which we operate, what drives us, and what we face every time we head towards the front door and out into the world. No more than a man can possibly fathom what it means to be a young woman. We love and admire our mothers to death, but they can't walk in our shoes. Men and women are much too different, and she will miss the mark. From the simplest things, like how to shake after you pee, to the most complex situations, like how to square off against another man and without anyone getting hurt in the process, still be able to walk away with your dignity intact.
I gotta say, I'm disappointed in our father for not teaching me to shake after you pee. Clearly, it's a pivotal time in every father-son relationship.
Where you just sit your son down, you're like, you gotta shake it out, bro. Let me show you how to do it.
Ugh. Unrelated, someone who's been on this podcast but will not be named did purchase me a game on Steam a couple of years ago. I don't know, this was probably like 2019, 2020, and it's like this super cheap pixel art game called Shower with Your Dad Simulator. And the whole game is like you're a kid who's like showering with your father in the men's locker room at a gym, and like every so often, like I think other dads will walk in and you have to make sure you're paired with your proper dad. So it's kind of like a matching game of like making sure. I did not play more than 5 minutes of it.
This is very Freudian. And also, you can't say that someone that it's been on our podcast, because we've had like 4 people on our podcast. So
no, we've had like 15. It could be a state senator that we had. No, it was not Melody Hernandez. I'll say that. Any thoughts on this section, Naomi?
I think it's dumb, and I think that just as much that you learn just as much from your motherly figure as you do from your fatherly figure. And so I think that it's fucking dumb that you sit down and you can only get life lessons from the male figure or the fatherly figure that's in your life.
Hmm? Bear with me. I think this makes sense. He's saying men apparently understand male responsibilities well enough to teach other men. He then later says they don't do that because men are horrible at sharing information. But he also says women aren't good enough at understanding women's responsibilities in a relationship, so they then have to go to a man, Steve Harvey, for advice. So men, according to Steve Harvey, understand maleness well enough to teach both men and women how to conduct themselves. Women either have nothing worth teaching men, or men just aren't going to listen regardless of how important the information is. That's the advice he's giving.
Hot.
Yeah, and like, it's also interesting because, like, I would argue if you accept that gender roles exist, which he seems to in both this book and the other one, where like, man, go work, woman, hold down household, you would think it might be helpful if a woman, like, gives a man a talking to about, like, how to cook dinner, how to clean dishes, how to do a load of laundry. Because it seems like if men aren't going to be fully actualized for a while, they're going to need those skills when they're living by themselves, not committing to anybody, right? You show up to work and you smell like dog do because you haven't showered and you haven't changed your clothes in 3 days, right? Like, that's not going to allow you to become actualized. I don't think there's a single CEO who, like, doesn't show up to work in clean clothing. Maybe Mark Zuckerberg, I don't know. But yeah, it seems like women might have a thing or two to teach men. And here he's just like, yeah. I should note, this mentality has real-world implications, and here's where the research comes in. According to PR Newswire, in an article released September 22nd of 2021 by Intimina, new Intimina study reveals shocking gap in men's knowledge of menstruation. International Women's Healthcare brand sheds light on nationwide issue. So a new study commissioned by International Women's Healthcare Group Intimina and conducted by YouGov revealed a shocking gap in men's knowledge of women's menstrual cycles. With 1,091 U.S. males surveyed, only 41% of men could correctly identify what exactly menstruation is. Of these findings, 52% believe a menstrual cycle to be a duration of 1 to 6 days, when in fact a menstrual cycle is between 23 and 35 days, which was correctly identified by only 20% of men. When respondents were asked to describe what having a period would feel like, a leading 40% said they would feel physical pain, closely followed by 36% revealing that a period would have no effect on them at all. In regard to menstrual hygiene, an astonishing 65% of men did not know what a menstrual cup is or how it works. In the same vein, 33% believed a 36-count box of tampons to cost between $13 and $20. So Naomi, this is men not knowing shit about women's health, either because they haven't listened or because no one has sat down to explain this to them. What impacts might this have?
Well, you can see that firsthand when we sent women to space and they thought that they needed like 100 tampons for a week. You can also see that on the lack of just sympathy or empathy that men have when women are, you know, giving birth to a child, and at a company they don't get paid maternity leave or maternity leave at all and are expected to come back in virtually right after they give birth, which can cause a lot of damage for the mother as well as the child's bonding process with the mother. So just a few quick things that can cause a lot of harm to women when men don't know what the fuck is going on in women's bodies.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I think it was Senator Todd Atkin who during the Obama administration was like on record making a statement where he was like, well, you know, if a woman's legitimately raped, you know, like actually raped, like don't they have a way of like shutting it down? Like can't the body like abort the pregnancy? And here you have a guy who's like making decisions for like women's healthcare for tens, hundreds of millions of people and doesn't have a basic knowledge of women's anatomy. He's like, oh, aren't they ducks? Aren't they geese? Aren't they like geese? Whales. They have the two vaginas.
No, whales. Oh. Whales can spontaneously abort. They also have trapdoors in their vagina.
I feel like a 1950s hack comic. What's the difference between a whale and a woman? Am I right?
Sure.
I don't know the answer to this, and Field's going to get sexual really fast, so we can move on. Naomi, Steve goes on to explain how he's actually a great father, because he's doing the thing his dad didn't do, and he's teaching his sons how to be real men.
I just want to take a minute and talk about one of his sons' names, Winton.
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 I guess the implication here is also Steve has sat down and explained how to shake your dick after you pee to his kids.
No, I'm thinking about, like, why is it not Winston? He also has Steve as one of his son's names. So he's obviously Steve Jr. Can you just imagine a tiny Steve Jr.? Just like one of those kids dressed up.
Well, he's
up
Broderick Stephen Harvey Sr.
With like a bald cap. And you're just imagining like a small baby with like dimples and bald cap. For sure, I've been teaching this to my own sons. Winton, Jason. Stupid name for a kid. And Steve. And that training starts the moment I open my eyes in the morning. Every day I have my sons wake up to at the same time as me, no matter what ungodly hour in the morning it is. If I'm hitting the treadmill and weightlifting at 4:30 a.m., so are they. If I'm going to the office at 5:30 and I'm working by 6, they're dressed and on their way somewhere too. If they've got school or their study workload is a little heavy, they still have to wake up and before they get themselves ready, text me their plans for the day so that they're working on and what they're working on and what chore they'll be completing before they sit down for breakfast.
Damn. What a good dad. No, you see any problems with this?
This sounds like he won't be having a relationship with his children after they turn 18. And they're not.
These kids are going to put him in a home. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a problem with this. So the Conversation magazine had an article in 2016, September 19, 2016, by Jens Olaf Walter, titled "Why Teen Brains Need a Later School Start Time." So research findings during the 1980s started to cast a new light on teenagers' sleep patterns. Researcher Mary Karsk-Hadden and others at Brown University found that the human brain has a marked shift in its sleep-wake pattern during adolescence. Researchers around the world corroborated these findings. At the onset of puberty, nearly all humans and most mammals experience a delay of sleep timing in the brain. As a result, the adolescent body does not begin to feel sleepy until about 10:45 p.m. It also found that sleep patterns of younger children enable them to rise early and be ready for learning much earlier than adolescents. In other words, the biology of the teenage brain is in conflict with early school start times, whereas sleep patterns of most younger children are in sync with schools that start early. So what actually happens to the teenage brain? In the teens, the secretion of the sleep hormone melatonin begins at around 10:45 p.m. and continues until about 8 a.m. What this means is that teenagers are unable to fall asleep until melatonin secretion begins, and they're also not able to awaken until it stops. What changes during the teenage years? Well, these changes are dramatic and beyond their control. Just expecting teens to go to bed earlier is not a solution. The author has interviewed hundreds of teens who all said that if they went to bed early, they would be unable to sleep. They would just stare at the ceiling until sleep set in around 10:45 p.m. According to the National Sleep Foundation, the sleep requirement for teenagers is between 8 to 10 hours per night. That indicates that the earliest healthy wake-up time for teens should not be before 7 a.m. A recent research study that I led shows that it takes an average of 54 minutes from the time teens wake up until they leave the house for school, with nearly half of all high schools in the United States starting before 8 a.m. and over 86% starting before 8:30 a.m., leaving home by 7:45 a.m. would be a challenge for most teens in America. The incidence of depression among teens significantly rises with less than 9 hours of sleep. Feelings of sadness and hopelessness increase from 19% up to nearly 52% in teens who sleep 4 hours or less per night. Teen car crashes, the primary cause of death for teenagers, are found to significantly decline when teens obtain more than 8 hours of sleep. What results? Results from schools that switch to a late start time are encouraging. Not only does the teens' use of drugs, cigarettes, and alcohol decline, their academic performance increases significantly with later start times. So Steve is an amazing dad who spends lots of time with his kids and has never bothered to read any fucking research about kids, brain psychology, education, anything. Probably because he thinks he knows everything. This is the exact same problem as his last book, where he's like, oh, I'm incredibly successful in the field of media, Therefore, I can be incredibly successful in the field of relationships. The problem is, here he is actively showing that he is harming his kids and thinking that this is a point of pride. Maybe his kids are going to turn out perfect. I don't know. But this is not good advice. He is a bad dad who is abusing his kids at a vulnerable period.
Exactly. This isn't parenting. This is a dictatorship. This is, they will look at their father as someone to fear. This is not a situation where they're like, oh, I messed up. I got my girlfriend pregnant. Let me talk to my dad about it. It's, oh, I got my girlfriend pregnant. Let's send her off to Argentina so I never have to deal with this situation again because my dad has taught me to do that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good example. I don't think he's teaching them how to fail. I do think that's an important thing, giving kids the understanding that, like, it's okay to mess up. You know, people who come from, like, really intense parents, you know, are probably going to be more likely to cheat. They're probably going to be more likely to, like, go out of their way to, you know, do well in school, whether honestly or not, because they're afraid of letting their parents down. I couldn't imagine what these kids would do, you know, if they had run over someone with their car, if they had, you know, failed a test, if they had, you know, not made the varsity football team. It doesn't seem like Steve would react positively, because he seems to think, like, if you just put in enough hard work and actualize yourself, you must do well. That's how the world works. It worked for Steve Harvey.
And you know why they made all those mistakes? It's because they're not sleeping correctly.
That's probably it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if he wants them to be successful, he should read the actual research that says, let your kids sleep in.
Yeah. Joel, let's wrap up this episode here. And
we're super close. I got one section and we're done with the chapter.
Oh, God.
You can't wait. We actually get to read this. So we're going to have a text message conversation after you read the first section.
And when they mess up, I bring the pain too. Just like this morning, all of them were supposed to be front and center down in our family gym at 4 a.m. to do a group workout with me. Hey, if I'm going to wake up and get on my grind before the sun rises so that I can provide their lifestyle, the least they can do is keep me company while I'm doing it. Well, 4:10 a.m. rolls around and I'm well into my workout and all my sons were still knocked out. When I called Steve's phone, he told me they'd all forgotten the plan. I sent a text to Jason first, reminding him that it was just like this in the jungle. The gorilla, me, is always on top of his game, and the gazelles, my boys, aren't swift or strong enough to keep up. Gorillas don't hunt gazelles!
Oh, you picked up on that. Also, gazelles don't live in jungles. They live in grassland. They might, like, see each other from afar and wave, but, like, gorillas are not attacking and eating gazelles like crocodiles. Okay, Naomi, we got a text message conversation between him and his son Jason. Do you want to be the gorilla in this conversation or the gazelle?
I want you to be the gorilla.
Okay, 7:49 a.m. Me, I text gorilla silverback, 2, gazelles, 0.
8 a.m. Jason, how do you score 2?
8:01 a.m. Me, gorilla takes what he wants. I get 2 points.
I love how this is 4 hours after they were supposed to be in the gym. Yes. 8:02 a.m. Jason, I'm going to take one back this afternoon. Your Bible is in my room. LOL.
8:02 a.m. Me. I told Miss Anna to put it there. Now you can figure out why. Gorilla 3. Gazelle 0.
Who's Anna? Who's Miss Anna?
Maid? Maybe the maid?
8:06 a.m. Jason, Dad, how can you keep scoring all the time?
I'd like that line, followed by 8:15 a.m. Me. I never stop coming. Love it when my dad tells me that. This is from your insides, your guts, you hear me? Your sinew, your will to win, your desire to show up and be counted, your pride. Where is your pride for doing what you said you're going to do? If I didn't do what I said I was going to do, you all wouldn't respect me. My desire to be respected is so great in me, it pushes me to excel. Where is your pride?
I needed them to know that their father is cranking. That while they were sleeping, I was downstairs doing downwind sprints and abs and working, earning a solid paycheck so that I could pay our bills to ensure we all have a roof over our heads, beds to lie in, and food on our table. A home for me, for their other, for them.
Okay, so this is just a crazy section. I highlighted 3 things and I was like, this got weirdly sexual. His sons are like, Dad, how you always scoring all the time? He's like, because I'm always cranking. I'm always cranking, no, boys. I never stop coming because I'm always cranking.
Oh my God. That's so disgusting. That's so gross. Like, I can imagine Steve Harvey saying that, though. Because, like, he always is like, there's this one meme. I'm gonna describe another meme while on this podcast. It's like a TikTok sound where he's like, what do you like when your girl does? Or what do you, something like that. And the guy, this was on Family Feud, and he's like, oh, I like when she sits on my face. And the Steve Harvey's like, yeah, he's like, oh, yeah. And I was like,
yeah. So you pointed out, like, the fact that gorillas don't hunt gazelles. I think this is kind of stupid. I think it's also a better message to say, like, sometimes even if you work hard, you're going to fail. Sometimes people just lose, and his kids should, like, understand that. Otherwise, he's just doing, like, YouTube grind set memes. He's just doing all this, like, influencer shit. This isn't meaningful advice. Second, he says in the book, in the text, that he holds them to this routine. But as you point out, even in this example, he's slipping up. He says they missed the 4 a.m. start time, but then the first time he texts them in this probably made up example is 4 hours later. So either he's not holding them to it and is still tormenting them, or he just made all of this up. None of it makes a lot of sense. We can wrap up here. I guess what I wanted to say here is that Steve Harvey's ideal is a man who's working on himself. But he doesn't seem to understand that so much of, like, what it means to work on yourself is outside of your control. It's not that people, like, can't change. It's true that people have the ability to change. It's that sometimes the act of changing is not enough to actually be successful, right? You might study really hard and get a good college degree, and then no one's hiring in your field, so you can't work in that field. You might, you know, go out and get super swole and buff, and women in your area are put off by super swole and buff people because they had bad experiences with them. So you can't date all the hot supermodels you wanted to, right? Like, there are things outside of your control that will dictate your life. He just completely ignores that. He's really doing that whole, is it prosperity gospel? That's the thing that, like, Christian ministers do, where, like, if you believe enough, if you, like, you know, have enough faith, like, it's going to come to you. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense because, like, Steve Harvey has spoken openly about his Christian faith. You know, he almost does, like, kind of a gospel talk show. You know, he's always bringing in, like, the Bible and talking about how important it is to him. So, like, it makes sense that he would adopt, you know, the things that they're saying. But here he is bringing it in to this completely inapplicable section of his, like, book on romance. To finish this chapter, he's like, look, I must be successful. One of my sons was accepted to Morehouse. And Morehouse is this, like, historic, prestigious, you know, black college. But it's like, is that proof you're successful? Are you telling me that the son of one of the most famous black media personalities in the world applying to Morehouse wouldn't raise some, like, eyebrows at Morehouse and then being like, oh, we should probably, you know, get Steve Harvey on the endowment, right? Like, I don't know if that's proof of anything. It's just proof that, like, being the son of Steve Harvey might allow you to have an easier way in life. And so here he is describing this section. He's like, I was sobbing when my sons were, you know, so successful at proving that I'm raised them right. And it's like, no, you know, someone flipped the coin. You did well in life. Sorry, a lot of your success is probably based upon luck. That's just the way the world is. And now you think that this is somehow helpful for other people. It's not, Steve. Most people aren't going to Morehouse. Sorry, bud. So in conclusion, chapter one is horrible advice that contradicts his former book and shows him to be a lousy father. It's a great start, and that is just the beginning of what will be a wonderful follow-up to Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man.
Woo! I actually didn't mind this episode. I was tricked, but I didn't mind it.
Excellent. And we got that in under an hour, too.
Yeah. Perfection. Incredible.
Awesome.
Woohoo!
Well, thank you so much, listeners, for sticking with us. We promise we have more Steve Harvey exclusive content. Steve Harvey is kind of the Moriarty to this podcast. You know, he's kind of our, like, nemesis. He's the Joker. He's Lex Luthor. He kind of is Lex Luthor. He's bald. But yeah, we will be returning to this. Not sure when, but it's coming soon. So thanks for sticking with us. And if you haven't already, give us a like on Spotify. Follow us on Patreon. Send us your checks in the mail. If you have any endowments you want to give us, we'll take those too.
He did mean that in a non-sexual manner, just so everyone's aware.
Yeah, yeah. If you have extra large K-cup breasts, send them to us in the mail. And that's it. Bye for now. 'Many thanks for the use of our theme music, which is the song Drop by Ketsa. You can find more of their music online at ketsa.uk. You can also find Date These Guys online on Twitter and Instagram at datetheseguys or visit datetheseguys.org. If you have questions for the podcast or want to be a wealthy sugar parent, please send an email to datetheseguys@gmail.com. If you'd like to support our work, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/datetheseguys. We have behind-the-scenes information, early episode access, participation in polls, and exclusive access to a guy sibling map of date ideas for the Arizona area. Since the world sucks right now, we are currently donating all Patreon proceeds to trans organizations like Trevor Project, a trans suicide prevention organization, and moving assistance funds for those fleeing states, outlawing their very existence. Please consider becoming a member and supporting our work today.